Today's program is brought to you by Fire Cider, a health tonic based on the traditional New England cure-all of raw apple cider vinegar and honey. For more information, visit firecider.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Fernando Aciar of O Cafe, FIFO Studio, and these beautiful little coasters plates that I have in front of me. Usually I'm drinking a glass of water when I'm on air, but I've never had it placed on something so beautiful.
Thank you.
So this was kind of one of those situations where, you know, I strolled into a place and I saw something and I put it in the back recesses of my mind. And then I saw it again, and I put it in the back recesses of my mind. And it was your pottery. It was your ceramics. And then my wife worked in Midtown, near Little Brazil, and found out, I don't know how, about pão de queijo. Now, let's start about that little Brazilian cheese bun and kind of expand from there. But talk to me about, you know, why that is at the core of what O Cafe is.
When we opened 5 years ago, I want to keep the cafe as simple as possible. So basically, I want to serve coffee and what coffee comes with. And it was the pão de queijo, cheese buns, because it's a basic thing that you have in the farm in Brazil. Initially, I just want to serve a Brazilian coffee. And with that comes the cheese buns. So it was very interesting to see the community in the village to adopt the tiny buns, like very radical. A product today is like, I don't know how to explain. The kids, they come, they cannot live without them. And it took like 3 years to create the movement that we have today of it's like obsession.
Yeah.
To people that they have already 3-4 kids in 5 years, 3 kids, and they move like 5 blocks away. Maybe it's not anymore village, but it's village, and they had to come and walk because the kids, they want it. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, let's note that O Cafe sits on, what is it, 6th Avenue?
6th and West 12th Street, yeah.
And it was the former location of Joe Jr.
Yeah, exactly.
And Joe Jr., for any New Yorker that loved kind of old school diners, that was a place to get just like the greasiest spoon hamburger in town, and it was so loved that there may have been a little pushback when you came in.
Oh, but they hate me.
But how could they ever hate you?
I don't know, they hate me. Like, it was painful. I dreamed with Joe Jr.'s for months.
Yeah
Other people used to open the door and say, Joe Jr.'s! And they disappeared.
And just run away.
And run away. And we're all like, oh my God.
Yeah, but you're at this amazing time in New York where there, you know, sadly, aren't many diners as there used to be. But the transition is we use coffee shops in the way that all-day diners were, you know, inhabited for years.
So true, yeah.
So how does the concept of a restaurant change when you go from a diner to a coffee shop?
Well, initially, I think the coffee shop, I was tired of cooking and I just want to have coffee and be more simple. So, you know, I travel all over Brazil and South America and until I put together the cafe and I just want to have coffee and chocolate. That's it. But then because I was former chef, and, you know, I ended up making muffins and admin things and it became today like... No, I hate restaurants. I don't want to have restaurants. I prefer the casual. It goes with my personality. But so it became so much of the food that, of course, today we are a cafe. And it means that O Cafe was O Cafe because it's the coffee in Portuguese. And I was in Brazil for 10 years. But today we are a cafe. And I agree, it's the new diner. It's a new diner where all these individuals with 80 and 70 years old come and read a newspaper. And they are with the hipster next to them and, you know, the family and the kids and the artist. And it's so interesting. It's completely different. It changed. Also, I think because the diner is not pro quality, and we are also self-aware of quality today. It's like we pursued only for that. And if the diner is not doing a good job in terms of bringing quality, why am I going to pay that when I can pay for better product? It's coming with customer service, better ambiance, more mindful. And we became that. We're in New York. Everyone wants to be better, better, better. So it's all about compostable, like being, you know, connected to what's going on today. And I think the diner is not doing that anymore. It's like an old lady. We love it because, you know, it's always been there, but I hope we can reborn that somehow, but I don't see it. I try myself to go to diners, but I can't take it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's exactly what you said. You know, the simplicity, it's so in front of your face that you can't really hide poor quality. And, you know, that's why you strive for such high quality things, aside from just service and food, creating this atmosphere that, you know, feels refined, but also feels very casual. But on that note, you aren't Brazilian at all.
No, I'm an Argentinian.
Yeah, and in Argentina, when you grew up, you were used to having, you know, a kitchen full of ladies making, you know, tomato jam.
Yeah.
Your dining room table kind of taken over for months with quince paste drying. Mm-hmm. And it's these very simple things that took, you know, a lot of time and effort to make and refinement that I think are kind of staples of how you think about food.
Well, there is no doubt that you are made of what your background is, you know, your history. I don't choose to be a chef or a cook or something like that. I think it was the only thing that... But I want to be an architect or a designer, but it was super crazy for where I come from. So the repetition of seeing food and great food and grandmas and parents that are involved with food made me choose something that I felt completely confident. And even though it was a crazy thing to do by the time, I became the only first cook of the generation of my town, I think. And I had to fight with my father and leave the house and everything because I want to do that. But he never realized that that was what I saw my whole life, like in a different way, more in the cultural way, more folkloric way, with all these ladies, because in South America we have so many people working for you, you know, around the house. And even if we are in the country, you're going to have always someone that you are the godfather, godmother of the family, so they come and help you. In exchange, you give food. For example, you can give the leftovers of the queens and they can make jelly. And so you give sugar and the leftovers and they can have jelly the whole year. So things like that, I don't know, it's like so interesting. And even the slaughtery of the pig, you know, you're going to have 5 days of work and then sausages and prosciutto and all that we make by ourselves. So I grew up like that, and I never mean to be a cook, but I was dying to do something different. And that's why the pottery today, I think I started doing pottery when I was a kid, but that was very, very like... terracotta style, you know, like a more Andes, different style. But I felt the same feeling of cooking and the process of ceramic making is so similar that I never understood how I migrate so fast in so short time. And today I have Fefo Studio. Fefo is because my friends from Brazil call me like that. And I want to keep it hidden because I'm not in Brazil anymore. But then my wife's friends from France start to call me Fefo, Fefo, Fefo. And now it's not hidden anymore. Yeah. So
what does Fefo mean?
Fernando Fefo. It was Fefinho. In Portuguese, Fefinho is like dear one.
Yeah.
Like in my name, but dear one.
Yeah. So Fefo Studio was this kind of natural extension for you because of the tactility of working with your hands. And we were talking about bread baking prior to the show. Mm-hmm. And there's one bread in specific, tortillas al rescoldo, uh-huh. which happens in Argentina, which actually doesn't feel like a bread that has much, interaction.
You want to know how we make them?
Yeah, or? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So I used to go with the lady who takes care of my grandma to the river, and we grab sand. So the sand will cover these flatbreads that are made of flour and fat or butter and milk. And we put fire on top, and it will take, it's called rescoldo because in Spanish means overnight. So it will cook overnight. So the day after you come, you open the sand and you have this burnt flatbread. Then you scratch with a knife. And then in Mendoza, where is the wine capital of Argentina, they call raspaditas because it's like scratchy ones. But that's the commercial version. But we have them at home and they're so delicious with mate or with any cheese. And actually, every time when I go once a year, I grab 10 and I always come with them and I put them in the freezer. So I still have two. I just moved from my apartment to another.
Yeah.
And I bring the two leftovers I have.
Yeah.
That's my background, my family. It makes me feel very connected. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about working with your hands again and, you know, that bread and everything else that you had done in Argentina, as well as ceramics, kind of... Did you feel like a child? Did you feel like a kid
yes.
playing, or did it feel like you were working towards a profession?
Yeah, I had deeply that part of a kid. And this is the fact to be in New York is all about business and, you know, you disconnect with yourself and disconnect with your soul and what you should be and, you know, you mean to be something different. And the fact of working with clay is super, gives you a meditation state. And also, you play. So when you're a kid, you play. You just feel the comfort. You don't need to do anything for anyone. It's just for you. It's very naive. And in the fact that you're creating something, the tendency when you're working in the wheel is to become everything a bowl. No, it's the round thing. But then when you start discovering that you could add a handle or a weird shape, then you migrate to casting, slip casting, which I did when I was 10, and I never knew that was so cool to do by yourself, crazy molds. So then the evolution goes from the wheel to the slab, and you're playing all the time. And then when you decide to discover and go deep with glaze, which is all chemicals, there's not any more flour and sugar, you know, which is... it's very easy to understand, but then you're working with chemicals that can affect your health. And the temperatures and all that, it's nonstop. So at that point, I'm so confused today on what to do in terms of the style that I've been through different processes. So the cafe became my biggest experiment, and the customers, they can tell, because I've been bringing batches of 12, 24, 8, 6 different cappuccinos, espresso cups all over. They stole them also. You know, it was just so funny. Today, I kind of understand what I want. I'm still in the process, but I want to add color into things, but in a way that's fun. And it never feel like you are buying an IKEA cup, because the process is it takes a lot of time to do it, and it's all about time and time, and your hands are working on it, and you know, it's like it's your personal work, so there is a value there. And then I understand that people see it now today. I think ceramics, they became very hip for restaurants and for all that. Which I use the wave, by the way, because I know my friend chefs, and I start to sell them. So it became a business
yeah.
today.
You see them in Contra, Wild Air.
Yeah.
Does your friend Ignacio.
But, well, yeah, I'm still in process. There are two huge jars. It's been like for 2 months, they're going to kill me, but I need to finish that. It's just they crack if you, accelerate the process. I just delivered Momofuku Nishi, and I'm working on the prototypes for the tea pots, and then Prana Chai from Canada, from Australia. I sell to Canada for a wine bar, And all because Instagram, which I never been Instagrammer.
Yeah.
And I don't like much, but that brings me business. So I respect a lot that fact.
Well, I mean, your work is also beautiful. Well,
thank you.
You know, and the most amazing part is that you do all this work and, you know, it's not, you know, mass manufactured. You are taking it home and you are hand painting every single one. So I just don't even know how you have the time to do it. And I only assume it's because you own a cafe and you have plenty of coffee. Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of energy and that's a big problem because, it's too much. Sometimes I have a breakdown. I was so tired. But because I don't respect the moment I should stop. And I bring home and we are moving and I say, we need to have a room for my studio. And my wife said, no, not possible. No, here too. No. I paint and I have few commissions I send to places in California, Napa for restaurants, for architects and designers. So it's been so fast. I cannot believe it. It's too much going on and it's by myself and I'm in the process of I should keep doing by myself or bring more people involved and become more commercial. And so I'm in that point. So far I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's I feel extremely lucky to do what I love deeply. Like I would love that many people have the same opportunity, you know.
Well, if you're listening and you want to, you maybe work in ceramics, you can find FIFO Studio out in Rockaways and stop in Old Cafe and see Fernando and offer your hand.
Well, come to the show May 18th.
Yes.
It's the opening.
It's going to be an exciting show. And we're going to get back to that. We're going to take a quick break. You can listen to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Fire Cider. Did your grandmother ever tell you to drink raw apple cider vinegar? It's good advice and more common than you may think. For generations of New Englanders, a tot of vinegar was a morning ritual. Taken daily, a tablespoon of unfiltered apple cider vinegar can help support immune function and digestive functions. To the base of certified organic apple cider vinegar, Fire Cider added whole, raw, certified organic oranges, lemons, onions, ginger, horseradish, habanero pepper, garlic, and turmeric. They let this mixture steep for 6 weeks at room temperature to preserve the living vinegar culture and delicate flavors of the ingredients. Lastly, they blend a generous helping of raw wildflower honey into the mix. The result is potent but balanced, offering layers of sweet, tart, and spice. Fire Cider tastes great on its own or as an addition to tea, juice, or salad. Fire Cider ships direct from their online store and is available at over 500 locations nationwide. Use their store locator to find one near you and ask for a free sample. For more information, visit firesider.com. The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. You'd be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
And welcome back to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan-Jerkel, here today with Fernando Haciara of O Cafe Fefo Studios. And we were talking about, you know, many of things, from clay to Pau de Queijos, but let's talk about fire, because you spent a lot of your cooking career with a man well known for setting things aflame. That is Francis Maumann. Talk to me about the influence he had on you, his cooking style, and maybe how that translated into how you run your businesses now.
I think the first thing that I saw from Francis is that there is no limit when you work with him. There is a lot of work, more than normal, but there is no limit, so he give us the approach to everything. So you can be connected today with a king, a queen, or a simple person. And that's his way to work, and always very romantic and dreamy. You never know that when you're there, more if you... In my case, I come from Hachal, San Juan, Argentina. I'm going to Mendoza, which is like 2 hours. And my first job was with him when I was 18, so I never knew other way. I never been in Buenos Aires before. It was like from country to his universe. So, of course, you are attached to the view and aesthetics of his way to be because it's very personal. But I felt home, and I felt that I was in a place that I love to live in Mendoza, doing the right thing at the right time. And I never knew. And he was not famous. Oh, of course, in Argentina, like big-time TV celebrity and in the restaurants, but he was not famous anywhere, like maybe in Europe, but maybe France. But in London, he has friends, but no, like, the craziness that's happening today with the series in Netflix, which if you say, are you Argentinian, you say Francis Malman, or you say the Pope or Messi. So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, Francis, I worked with him for 6 years, my early career, all over, from Uruguay in Los Negros, which is the most beautiful restaurant ever. And then different situations, like going to Sao Paulo and working in places in Europe and opening in Sao Paulo La Figuera. That's why I stay in Brazil, Sao Paulo and then Rio. And then an opportunity to be here in Long Island in Hamptons when Patagonia West was there like long, long time ago.
Yeah.
It was fun, yeah. My first approach to New York downtown.
So what about New York made you want to be here?
The energy of everything possible. Like there is no way that you can be, like here you can do anything. Like, I was in Sao Paulo, and it's insane, the city. You can be in the F and can be insane. But nothing like New York. You have no title here. You can be anyone you want to be and do anything you want to. So being in Rio for 7 years, I thought there was a limit. And I was very happy to be there, but there was a limit, and I was very young, and I still won a challenge. And I found challenges in New York,
yeah.
big ones. Not easy, but I'm doing what I mean to do, and I'm doing the right thing today for me personally.
And you were drawn in through a friend, Ignacio Matos, who was working at El Buco, and said, come on over, cook with me.
Yeah, but they were opening Alimentari. At that point, I really don't want to cook, and I want to dedicate to a product and my family, because making sausages and salami and jams and all that, I always like the idea to have an almacén and a product. So I felt like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It's more lifestyle, talk to people, I love that, and create like an environment. So Il Buco Alimentari was a perfect situation, but never opened. It took forever. So I ended in leaving, and the job I was helping at Il Buco in many stages, which I loved. I loved Donna. And then I went for the sabbatic and to find the idea of opening a cafe and traveling and getting research and learning about cacao, coffee, and creating a business. So then I went back, and Alimentari opened, and in the beginning we sell the coffee there. It was great. Yeah, and Justin, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
Friend. Yeah.
And you talk about creating an environment, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, what O Cafe looks like and feels like, but how close is it to those childhood memories? I know you've told me a story about you used to serve submarinos at O Cafe, but have since ceased.
Oh, yeah, true. So the Submarino situation is like my father forced me to go to the farmer's market 2 hours away from home at that point. And in the way that he the candy in this case was to drop me at the churros station. Was like a cafe serving submarinos, and that was the cherry on the, you know, on the cake for me. So of course I always say yes. They make these amazing Spanish wheel churros, and they cut with scissors, and they put sugar, and they put it just in paper. It was a huge amount of them, and they serve it at the submarino like it's just hot milk with the stick of this national chocolate called Águila, which everyone knows. And then you wait and you stir, and it's the most delicious thing on earth. You know, churro with submarino at 7 a.m. is like a dream. So I tried to do the same at O Café, but everyone was complaining that it tastes no chocolate, and it was not, you know, cacao powder, or you don't see the all coming together, because you have parts of chocolate, part of hot milk, and you need just to wait. So it never worked out. We have it for 4 months maybe. And then at one point I say, you know, I'm tired of people returning this. So it was funny. But yeah. I will do it sometime, because if you pursue for something, people get the idea. Like the pound de queijo and other things that we, even the Brigadeiros. That now Mariana from Brigadeiro Bakery, she opened her own. She's doing awesome. But we've been selling Brigadeiros forever. And then tapioca, which is it's my favorite thing on earth. Tapioca, it's opening soon in New York, 2 stores, and it's going to be for everyone to try the crepes that Brazilians have. And it's so perfect, you know, perfect with coffee, perfect with many things, just with cheese and oregano. And so 2 things are coming, and like the taco explosion all over. I think we're going to have different things going on from South America, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Whereas you said, you know, really anything can happen here in New York. It's amazing that you found yet another collaborator that you never thought you'd work with, a cake maker by the name of Margaret Braun.
Yeah.
And there is that amazing creative energy here that you really can do whatever you want. And what are the two of you doing? How did this transpire?
Well, we are soulmates, I think. She was the
date. And your wife knows that.
Yeah. She was a date of a friend coming to our wedding. And then we met. I was drunk, of course, at my wedding. And then I never saw her again until she found me at the pottery studio. And then we bonded. And then I invite her to the studio in the Rockaways. And then we've been going together for 3 months. So we create this show. It's like, okay, I need to make cakes, she said. You know, I'm not making cakes enough now. But also I'm not selling pottery. Okay, we need to do a show. So we need to create something. Because we were in the transition, we are not potters, but either we're not bakers or chefs. We're in the transition in the middle of something. So we decided to put together this show, and Margaret has been making cakes for everyone for 30 years, and crazy cakes. So she developed her pottery working with porcelain in the same aesthetics, kind of very beautiful, natural feeling, thin, very special. So we're working in this show that's going to be, we have 2 different styles, so I think they go very well together. And it's going to be for the Design Week of the Seaport Studios, May 18th. In the afternoon, and then we have 2 weeks residency there. We want to have our open studio for everyone to come. We're going to have on the 19th a special dinner about design and food. It's going to be interesting. And then on the 26th, we have a talk about what happened and with artists when this change occurred, that you want to transform yourself in something else in the subject of food. So we have cake creator, like moderator, a panel of 6 interesting people that I will announce tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, this show was created about the intersections of food, art, and design. And I think it took a while for me to understand what the difference was between an artist and a chef. And I think, you know, historically, there was a difference, but only in the past maybe decade, even less than that, have those two things kind of amalgamated. You know, they've fused in this way that you are a creative, emotive, you know, connected person to something other than just food.
Yeah.
You want to express yourself.
Yeah, it's beyond food. It's not just food. It's so much going on. And today we have so many ways to express ourselves that the title of being one thing is not allowed anymore. I think we shouldn't be called one thing. It's complicated because we're already complex human beings, and you go through process of art. And then because food is art, it goes and evolves, and architecture is art. You know, you love to cook and music. So you never go and you navigate for different channels, and ceramics is one of them, painting is one of them, sculptures are one of them, and keep going on. You know, it's like you're never going to stop. I think that there is no anymore a title. That's why we want to have the talk to discuss this and what's going on with us more when we are in the 30s and we have this thing, I want to do more than this. This is not enough for me, and I'm tired of this, or maybe I going to incorporate new things to this. And that is what is happening. You're creating like a community around you of things that you feel related and makes you feel happy. For me, it's all about living today. So if that means for you to do, just do it. And don't think about what people say, just do it. And I can see that I did it. And yeah. It's like, you know, too much going on now, which is great.
And one of the best places in New York to go and contemplate that thought exactly is O Cafe.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on, and I can't wait to see your chat at Design Week.
Okay.
You've been listening to The Food Scene at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big shout out to Firesiders. I couldn't ask for a better sponsor, being how much I love vinegar. And music by Cookies and David Engineering.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.